Welcome to this week's episode of Off the Assembly Line. I'm your host, Rebecca Reed, and every week I sit down for possibility-sparking conversation with innovative educators and entrepreneurs who are bringing the future to education, one beautiful disruption at a time. Is there an academic course subject as universally polarizing or intimidating as math? Probably not. But does it have to be that way? I'd like to suggest that it doesn't, and my guest today is going to pull back the curtain on how we can approach math differently. I'm talking with Dr. Georgie Hart, co-founder and education director at Sparks, a UK-based education company that spent the last 8 years reimagining the way math is learned and taught in schools, and now supporting more than 1 million teachers and students across the UK. Georgie and I talk about what Sparks is doing differently, the very real phenomenon of math anxiety, and how educators and parents can help students develop confidence to thrive in math. I asked Georgie to tell me a little bit of her story.
Well, I was raised by a single mum who worked incredibly hard as a full-time nurse in the NHS, the National Health Service. And I always found maths really easy.
For Georgie, growing up with a natural gift for math meant an eventual career in accounting, or so she thought. And this was fine, a solid career path, but not necessarily what made her come alive.
Not that there's anything wrong with being an accountant. It's a brilliant career. But that was really the only option, which I think is not ideal in terms.
It wasn't until her postgraduate program, when she was able to study coding and dive deep into operational and decision math, that she fell in love with the subject.
So how do you staff a neonatal ward? Where do you position your ambulances to reduce wait time? You know, solving real world problems that really matter.
And when she began to see how math could actually be used to solve global problems, the love of math was solidified.
And during my MSc, I worked with the World Health Organization on modeling the HIV and tuberculosis epidemics in Kenya. And then I undertook my PhD. And again, this was something I never thought I'd do. It was something that I thought other people did. I had this view that it was something you'd hide away in a broom cupboard-like office working on something very intensively that only a handful of people in the world really care about. And I was wrong. That's not what it is. And I was offered the opportunity to work alongside the World Health Organization and the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. And I was building simulation models to determine the efficacy of different interventions for tuberculosis control in Zimbabwe. So, like you say, I loved it. And I loved it because it was about real world application, and it was making decisions on things that really matter. And what a great way to be using maths.
I asked Georgie to tell me a little bit about how her work with Sparks began. And she shared how a 2-week project turned into an 8-year journey.
Yeah, so Sparks happened quite organically, really. I was working as a statistical consultant for Mark Dixon, and he knew that I'd been volunteering by doing outreach programs in primary schools, inspiring children to love maths and spending time with them solving real life problems and inspiring them to all the cool careers that are available to them through maths. And he had just started a new company called Sparks, and he asked me to help for 2 weeks. And we are exactly 8 years on from that now.
And over these last 8 years, Sparks has created an evidence-based platform and approach that's helped more than 1 million students and teachers rethink math altogether. I asked Georgie what Sparks looks like in the classroom and how they've been able to create this impact. Here's our conversation.
Yeah, so we're a socially focused learning technology company. So our aim is to improve numeracy and feel very strongly, therefore, the life opportunities for over 5 million learners by 2030. So it's adaptive technology, and we automatically provide each student with their own personalized and bespoke learning journey through maths. So our solutions they're really all about pedagogy, and they're heavily evidence-based, especially given my background and Mark Dixon's background in maths. So we've got proven impact on attainment and progress in maths. So students are making 65% more progress compared to national average, and disadvantaged students are making the same progress as non-disadvantaged students, which is just so wonderful to see. But most importantly, it's the change in the confidence you see in the children, and that's really exciting. So what does it look like? So we've got many solutions. We've got a classroom solution, a homework solution, we've got independent learning and times tables and mental arithmetic and so on. But the classroom solution, we keep the teacher at the core. That's really important. So the lesson will typically cover one or two learning objectives, and the teacher will teach that objective, and then they'll set the students off onto Sparks. So the students will each have a device, and they will be practicing on that device a carefully scaffolded set of questions on the learning objective that the teacher has just taught. And that leads up very, very gently to the key learning skill. And the teacher has a device which shows them at a glance how each student's doing, and allowing them to know who to assist and when. And this is really important, because what we try to create and what we have created is really about optimizing where the teacher spends their valuable time. So knowing exactly which student to help at which time on what skill and what problem, because we really felt this was really about not replacing the richness of that one-to-one. I really don't think you can replace the richness of that one-to-one interaction with the teacher. So let's optimize that. Let's make sure that that's happening as much as possible. At the same time, every child is going through all of their questions, and every question has a tutorial video. So, and it's very particular to that exact question, and that's really important, because even if there's a slight change in the difficulty of the question, they'll get a new video that really caters to that particular question, that skill. But all the time the student is working at their own level and their own pace, and the teacher knows exactly who to assist on what, and as I said, really enabling those rich one-to-one interventions and support to happen. And so, and occasionally a teacher might see that actually all the students are struggling on a particular thing, so they can pause that and go through and immediately address what that problem or misconception is with the class and let them then carry on. So then once everyone's completed the core skills, the teacher will lock the devices, and it's quite funny at that point, you hear this groan from the class because they've been stopped working on their maths. And this is amazing, right?
Wonderful.
We're not talking about affluent schools here. We're not talking about highly motivated children necessarily. But, you know, they're paused so the teacher can continue teaching on the next learning objective. And then they will get to practice that once that teaching has finished. And at the end of the lesson, a teacher gets a lovely summary of how the students have done on that learning objective, and that allows them to determine how to pitch the next lesson or what areas or misconceptions to address.
So this is what happens in class. But next, Georgie spoke about the role of homework and how Sparks addresses homework. And the thoughts that she shares here are simple enough, maybe even intuitive, but it honestly blew my mind to hear them out loud. And it may be the first time I've heard homework discussed in quite this way. Check it out.
It all gets created automatically, so the teacher doesn't need to do anything if they don't want to. It takes the lessons the teacher's covered that week, which it already knows, and allocates a large proportion of the homework to that, because we think it's really important that students have the opportunity to consolidate something they've done, something they've been taught that week. But the key is it will be at the student's level. So if in the class you struggled, then you might get to go over that again, or you might even drop down to cover some prerequisites. But if you found it straightforward, then we're not going to waste your time on that. We'll push you on to doing extension or challenge material. And because we've got such finely graded content, really beautifully scaffolded with tiny steps in between each question, and because it's all mapped together so we know all the dependencies, it's really easy for us to create this unique path for each student. And that is just so important in terms of motivating and engaging those students. So for instance, just within year 7 and 8, we've got 77 unique learning points just within adding and subtracting fractions. So that's just how finely graded it is, and how therefore we can just tweak it slightly to make it slightly easier or slightly harder for each student to just keep them motivated and so on. So the key is really just no one's left unsupported and no one's left unchallenged. the key there is just keeping that student in that zone of proximal development, that flow state, which we've all been in at some point, that wonderful state where it's not too hard, it's not too easy. You've almost forget what's going on around you and you're just kind of in the zone. And that's been key to really enabling students to feel that success of maths and being able to do their homework, complete their homework.
And this is what really flipped the lights on for me.
So we make sure we give all students an hour's homework, which will be different depending on how long you take to do your questions, which isn't necessarily linked to ability, but was so important for well-being and confidence. You know, you don't want those students that maybe are low in confidence or potentially got well-being issues or things going on at home, spending 3 hours on their homework compared to somebody else who's only spending 20 minutes. It's just so important for well-being. So to be able to create homework that's bespoke in length so that everyone's getting an hour as well was just so important. But all of this means that students are able to complete their homework. And that sounds like a really simple statement, but creating a homework that every single student can complete has just been really incredible for those students and the teachers.
I'm just listening to how you're breaking this down, and I'm so impressed with what you all have considered in the process. And I'm going to put a pin in a couple of things. I really want to come back to the role of the teacher. I want to come back to the iterative process that you all use to actually build, you know, the Sparks platform and tool. But I want to dive a little deeper right now into the idea you mentioned a few times about students' confidence. And, you know, the word math alone can create anxiety in the person who is hearing that word. We know that looking at math problems can create anxiety in, you know, a percentage of people, even just seeing a math problem before them. What are some of the challenges that keep students from loving or thriving in math?
Yeah, it's math anxiety is a huge problem. And it's, for those that don't know what it is, it's a negative emotional reaction to maths that can actually be debilitating. So if you're it's a feeling of fear or tension, and that actually then interferes with your maths performance. So the part of the brain that would usually be processing how to add this fraction is processing the anxiety. So it actually hampers the ability for you to add that fraction together because the anxiety takes over. So it's really real. In terms of where it comes from, actually, there's a lot of evidence to show that children often pick that up from adults, so from their teachers or from their parents, who themselves are anxious about their maths ability, and they can then pass that on, the fear or the lack of understanding on. But also, it's not just that. I think maths is a subject that's taught as either being right or wrong. And that getting the right answer is absolutely the most important thing. It's completely paramount. And that means that maths has an amazing ability to make you feel incredibly stupid. And I know it has to me, and I'm supposedly a great mathematician. I've got a PhD in maths, but I absolutely it has made me feel stupid. And so I think that obviously is a massive factor in maths anxiety. The impact on students, unfortunately, is often maths avoidance. And unfortunately, if you avoid doing maths, that leads to less competency, less exposure, less practice. And then it becomes a double whammy. So you're not only have you got this anxiety, which is hampering you, but you've also getting less practice, which will also be hampering you. So we've seen it firsthand in our schools. I've seen children in math classes, they're in the cringe position, you know, they're sat there as small as they possibly can be. How small can I get myself so that I can become invisible to the teacher?
This was such a poignant picture that Georgie painted, and I'm glad that she did it because I think a lot of us can identify with this either directly and personally or in working with students or children who are experiencing anxiety around math. So what can we do to help students who are feeling this way? Georgie breaks down four key strategies that Sparks has used to lower the anxiety that students feel around math. And I really like what she says here because these are strategies that all of us can start to employ for students, for children that we're working with around math, and maybe some that we can begin to adopt even for ourselves.
Actually, and I think the first thing was that beautifully crafted content that I mentioned earlier. And what I mean here is you might be presented with a problem, whether you've got a PhD in maths or not. You're presented with a problem, a maths problem, and you think, oh my goodness, I cannot do that. Oh my goodness, that looks terrible and scary. I have no idea how to do that. So really what it's about is taking you all the way back to the bit you can do. You're like, oh yeah, I can do that. Yeah, I can definitely do that. And then if you go in tiny little steps towards where you need to get to, you go, okay, yeah, I can do that. Yeah, I can do that. And there's no big jumps. There's no scary jumps in there. If you do it really, really carefully, then before you know it, you're there. You're like, oh, look at that. I did it. Wow. And so being able to have such finely graded content has been so key to sort of giving both the support and confidence to those students to say, let's take it back to what you do know. And let's build from there. And you almost won't notice that you'll get there. And what an amazing feeling when you do. So I think that's the first thing that we've done to, and that we've seen has really, really helped students in that situation. And then the second thing was what I talked about earlier, which is the zone of proximal development. So that is for every student, just working out what that is for that student. So where is that zone? Where is that flow state? Where do you need to be so that you're not feeling like this is too easy because that's just boring, but actually you're not feeling this is too hard, and so you just tip and go, I can't do this, and you give up. So really finding that sweet spot for each student, that's been really key as well to keeping them engaged, keeping that confidence up. Because otherwise, again, as I said earlier, you don't want to be presented with something and just go, oh, I can't do this. I'm stupid. It's making me feel stupid. So it's a horrible, horrible feeling. So making sure that we try to prevent that. And then the other thing is just every student experiencing success. So if you're in a class of 30 students, all of you have done an hour's maths homework. All of you, every single person, and you're leveling that class. So every student is experiencing success. Every student has completed their homework and got every single question correct. And that we shouldn't sort of underestimate how much that does for the student and how much confidence that gives them. And they're rewarded for effort, not for ability throughout our solutions. It's all about effort. I think the other thing is parental involvement. So many, many studies have shown how essential parental involvement is. But this is tricky, especially with maths. I think probably you know as well, lots of parents that think, oh my goodness, when my child gets to the stage where they ask me maths questions and I don't know what I'm going to do about that. And it's terrifying for them. So how do we help? How do we ensure there is parental involvement? So what we do is we send a weekly email to parents and it gives an update on how their child is doing. But also what it does is it sends the tutorial video for the skill that their child needs the most support on. And that does a couple of things. It enables them to, if they haven't done maths for ages and they can't remember how, or they've never done this before and they don't know how, or they did it before but it's changed. We don't do it like I used to do it when I learnt it. It just enables them to watch that tutorial video on their own first to just make sure they understand what's needed and how you approach the problem. And then they can sit with their child and go through that with their child as well. So that's been really important in terms of this maths anxiety side. And what we're encouraging also is to talk more honestly around your feelings on maths. So even the most competent mathematician will see a difficult problem and have feelings of fear or panic or frustration. But that if you stick with it and break the problem down and work through it, the feeling of satisfaction and pride that you get are wonderful. So encouraging that resilience is a really important skill, but encouraging us to be more honest with each other that's how you feel when you're going through something, so that people aren't worrying that it's abnormal and that actually it's perfectly normal and it's worth it because you get this wonderful feeling of satisfaction at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, really, there's so much power in the hands of educators and parents to model that thinking for their children, for their students. And it it's surprising how quickly students become okay with having those kinds of honest conversations and thinking through, you know, out loud and in the open, once adults in the room model that very thing.
Totally agree. And I think that's why we all have a responsibility to not wear the I can't do maths badge as a badge of honor. You know, you wouldn't say I can't read with such pride. And I think that's a responsibility that we can all take, whether we've got children, whether we're in teaching or not, is just for adults to not be wearing that badge. And then, you know, if that's the case, if we've got all this in place, what we've seen with children with maths anxiety is just phenomenal. It's just so wonderful. The impact on their maths, obviously, is wonderful to see. But it's also their approach to other subjects, because the confidence it gives them that, oh, I can do this. And that goes into other subjects. That changes their demeanor. It changes their potential ambitions, their mental health. It's really wonderful to see.
I love that. You know, I would probably usually ask this question more toward the end of our conversation, but I'm just so curious right now. You know, you all are supporting a million students in the UK right now. For schools outside of the UK who are listening to this and saying, oh my gosh, you know, if only. For those schools, if you were to distill down what you all are doing into some kind of bite-sized nuggets that educators can bring into the classroom, that parents can bring into their home right now, what are some nuggets that you would say, here, start with this?
I would say the first thing is amazing content. Now, we are a technology company, but I would say the technology is the enabler, and actually what it's all about is amazing content. So being able to provide students with that finely graded content so that the jumps aren't too big, and so you're able to really cater for each student at where they're at that moment. I think that's so important. I think what we've talked about also about sharing your true feelings and thoughts on the emotions of maths, and that everybody will feel fear on some things at some point, and encouraging that resilience is really important too. And I think finally, just really rewarding effort and trying to level that class, so it isn't sort of, well, I'm in the bottom set and I'm the one that's not very good, that actually the effort you put in and the progress that student can see can be so motivating.
Yeah, I love what you said about creating homework, a homework, you know, structure where every student is entering and spending the same amount of time, having the same level of success, and that finishing your homework shouldn't be overlooked as kind of this, you know, major accomplishment, this very significant thing. And I think if anyone is listening right now and would take a moment to kind of sit back and think back to high school, college, you know, or more recently, working through math problems that were really stumping them, just how frustrating that is. And like you talked about, those light bulbs and that kind of feeling of euphoria when you figure something out, that's pretty massive. It's a pretty stark spectrum, you know, that students are walking through every day, you know, depending on what kind of experience they're having, you know, frustration over and over again, or that feeling of accomplishment and that euphoric feeling of I did this every night. Over time, that has a major impact.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, I was a teacher for 4 years and have always had a healthy wariness of ed tech, broadly speaking, yep, because so much of it is developed quickly or without bringing students or teachers into the design process, or without even an understanding of what's actually happening in a classroom day to day. And one of the things that has impressed me so much about Sparks is your commitment to research and working with teachers and students to develop the solutions, you know, that are informed by them and actually work for them. And, you know, you mentioned you guys have spent 8 years building something truly transformative. Can you talk a little bit about what this process has been like and why you've been committed to not rushing it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've really taken an evidence-based design process. And I feel very strongly that that's how to make EdTech successful. So if we hadn't have done that, we absolutely would have got it wrong. So it's just about to develop EdTech, you have to get it wrong. You have to throw it away, you have to iterate, and you absolutely have to collaborate with the end user. And I mean every day. It's, I don't mean you build something and then you kind of parachute in and go, hey, here you go. Mm. I mean, we had a room in schools so that we were there and not just kind of during a trial of the solution, but all the time so that we could feel the pushes and the pulls and the stresses and the strains of the teacher and the parent and the student and the head. Because otherwise we'd create the wrong thing. And what we knew was that we wanted to create something that helped. We had some ideas of what we could do, but actually we needed them to tell us what they wanted. Now, that's really, really hard. So it's a really silly example. I heard it once said in a conference, but I absolutely loved it. But I didn't know that I needed a Dyson cordless Hoover until they made it. So, you know, you go into a school and go, we can make you anything. What do you need? What do you need? Mm. And they don't necessarily know, but mm-hmm. they are amazing if you build something and they'll tell you that it's not that. So you can make stuff and they'll quickly tell you that mm-hmm. it's not right, or how to take that bit. I like this bit and I like that side, and how to make it better. So every day going in, helping them use it, getting that feedback, going back that night, coding it up, bringing it back in. Is it this? Is this what you want? You know, you've got to be brave. You've got to be humble enough to throw stuff away. I remember many times being up half the night coding some new feature, and so excited to bring it in the next day. And then a student would say, Miss, this is rubbish. You know, and you're disappointed and it's crushing, sure. But you learn and you move on, and there's just no other way. And it's just so important in terms of making the right solution for all of those end users to make sure that you're iterating it with them, creating it with them. So it's what they need, it's what they want, and it fits in with their school day. It doesn't just kind of, yeah, that's okay, but in reality, I'm never going to have time to do this or that or whatever. I think the other thing is, if we hadn't constantly evaluated its efficacy, we would have released something that everybody loved, but actually didn't improve outcomes for students and wasn't steeped in pedagogy. So it's so easy for EdTech companies to mistake engagement for impact. Mm. But just because teachers and parents and students are engaged, it doesn't actually mean that it's working. And I think it's easy to think, oh God, we're getting so much great feedback, so surely our product must be working. But it's not always the case. And I know it can be tough, because I've done it, to collect and look at the cold, hard data that says otherwise and all that hard work. And you think, how can that possibly be? But I just really believe we have a moral obligation to. And I think it's the only way to ensure that you ultimately create something truly impactful. So I've got a little example of that. We'd written an algebra lesson. We went into a year 9 class. They were all on their tablets doing prolific amounts of algebra. And Mark and I looked at each other and just thought, this is amazing. We have cracked this. We've cracked maths education. It's amazing. You know, they probably did more algebra in that hour than they did the previous few months. And, you know, the results from the data coming through was showing that they were making amazing progression on solving equations or whatever the algebra topic was. But we did a pretest. And we did a post-test on paper, and the results weren't great. And we looked at each other and went, well, how can that possibly be? They've just done an hour of algebra, and the computer and data is saying that they've succeeded. And actually the cold, hard data, which is just a written assessment pre and post, is saying that they aren't understanding this. And actually we really spent quite a lot of time with teachers trying to unravel this and trying to work out why. And it came down to the fact that they weren't writing things down. So they were absolutely plugged into the technology. And actually, right near the beginning of our process, we learned the importance of students writing things down. So now what we've got is a really blended learning approach. We've weaved into our system the ability to check that students are writing things down, because it's so important, so they can't get away with not writing things down, which they don't enjoy, mm-hmm. but is amazing for them. So now they must write things down, and that has led to so much learning and much better impact in terms of what we're seeing from the results of those pre and post assessments. So I just think it's really important, because something like that you just would have missed if you hadn't looked at the impact that it was having.
That's right. Yeah, I just am so impressed with your process, truly. And I really would hold it up as a model, you know, for anyone who is attempting to meet a need in the education system, meet a need in the classroom. Get in there, ask questions, be willing to hear the hard answers, and yep. stay and continue that cycle of your own learning as you build. And, you know, you mentioned, I kind of wanted to, you know, ring some bells, a cowbell or something, when you said, you know, engagement does not equate to impact. And that is so tricky, because engagement is the gateway, right? Students can't learn if they're Absolutely. Not engaged. But it's only the starting point, you know, it's the, yeah. it's the catalyst, and it carries them through, through to be able, to learn what they need to learn. But it is only, it's really only that gateway. So I love that you called that out as well. Let's talk a little bit more about the role of the teacher. You talked about Sparks really facilitating those one-to-one interactions, that one-to-one support. What is the role of the teacher with a solution like Sparks, and how do they make it effective?
The teacher is absolutely integral to the success of Sparks. I think it's amazing in the hands of a very qualified teacher. I think in the world of evolving AI, I think the role of the human intelligent becomes even more important. And as I said, I just don't think you can replace that richness of the one-to-one interaction. You think about everything that's going on there. You know, you've been signposted to go and help a student on a particular thing, but you are tapping in as a teacher to, yes, their ability, their previous ability, previous misconceptions, but you're also tapping into their mood, their sleepiness, their attitude, their, you know, you're pulling everything together and using all that human intelligence to then unlock that student. And I think that is something we can't replace. So it's really just about helping those interactions happen more and more. I think teachers are the ones that will inspire, and they're the ones that will bring the topics to life, and they're the ones that will champion you and make you believe in yourself and make you believe in your potential, whether that's whether you can go to uni or whatever. So I think what we've done is create something that really empowers the teacher to do this. And what's also lovely is we've found that teachers using Sparks have fallen in love with their jobs again, which is just so wonderful.
Yeah, that's goosebump level for me. I mean, that's, yeah, you're speaking to a real passion of mine there. Oh, we don't have time to go deep into detail about this, but I do want to ask you, in thinking about the longer term impacts of math education and helping students fall in love with it, where are you seeing career opportunities that are relatively unknown or that schools might not be taking advantage of yet?
Yeah, I think we really need to help our schools and our students have access to more role models and real life mathematicians, and understand what it is that you can do with maths, so that they can see the potential of maths to help solve some of the world's problems, and they can see the career options available. And teachers aren't always in the best position to do that either, because they don't have a background in maths in some cases. Certainly that's the case in the UK, even if they're a maths teacher, or that they went straight into teaching. And so I think industry needs to support the schools by being in schools, and we need to make it real. We need to make it real for the students so they can get excited about it. I think there's a couple of organisations that I know of. There's a great organisation called Founders for Schools in the UK, and that really creates sort of meaningful and inspirational encounters between schools and businesses. And I think that's wonderful in terms of connecting up with maybe local businesses, local entrepreneurs, so that they can come in and inspire children and talk about what they're doing. And there's another great initiative in California called World of Work, which is a really comprehensive K-12 curriculum solution. It's amazing what they're doing in terms of exposing children to understand their values and their motivations and explore that in terms of a career and giving really early exposure to that. I think they're both doing great things in that area, because how can you be what you can't see? So it's just so important. So I think we need more of those.
That's great. I couldn't agree more. If you could give an A to someone, person, organization, school, whoever, who would you be giving an A to right now?
Actually, I think it would be World of Work. I'm really excited by what they're doing. I think the social mobility aspect of what they're doing is so important, even just back to my example of the fact that I nearly didn't go to university, and I'm sure it would have been okay, but it wasn't an informed choice, and it's just so important that children know what opportunities there are for them, and then they can make the choice. And if that's an accountant, that's wonderful. Like I say, it's a great career, but it's if you're not having a choice that's really sad. And that lack of choice often comes down to the fact that you just don't know. Right. You don't know about these things. And so I really think what World of Work are doing, both in terms of the sense of confidence they're giving the children in understanding themselves better and how that relate to career, but also the fact they're bringing it into the curriculum. So they're able to do something in maths and then say, well, what career are we looking at the moment? We're looking at architects. Well, how do you think architects would use maths? Or whatever it is that they're doing. It's, I think, looping it all back in so that whatever they're learning in English or in art or in science or in maths, they're thinking, how is this relevant to which careers and how is this used in the real world? I think that's really wonderful.
I love it. Yeah, I'm familiar with World of Work. I'll make sure that we link both of those organizations in the show notes so folks can connect with them and see what's going on. And before we jump off here, Georgie, how can people get connected with you? How can people get connected with Sparks? How can they learn more?
So come to our website at Sparks with an X, so sparx.co.uk, and all the details are on there. And also, really importantly on there, we share all our research and all our learnings. So we've got a randomized controlled trial on there about the importance of homework and so on. So everything is on there in order to get in touch with us and read what we've learned so that we can share that with the community.
Fantastic. Well, Georgie, it's been such a pleasure to have you on. I feel more excitement about math education than I have felt in a while. So thank you so much for pulling back the curtain and getting us to reimagine what math education could look like. So thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I'm so glad to be able to spend another week with you telling stories of change makers in education and hopefully setting off some sparks for what is possible. If you want to take it a step further and level up with others making an impact in education, the Teacher Mastermind might be your next step. It's a community for educators, entrepreneurs, and business professionals working to bring change to education and doing it together. Go to teachermastermind.com for more info or shoot me an email. Off the Assembly Line is produced by me, Rebecca Reed, with many thanks to the incredible guests who share their stories every week. If you're digging these episodes, share it with someone who needs to hear it and let me know what you think. You've got 4 weeks left in 2019. Keep moving forward and go make a ruckus.